नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय.
रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 5 द मीटिंग ऑफ नंद महाराज एंड वसुदेव. टेक्स्ट 20. वसुदेव अश्रुत्य भ्रातारं नन्दमागतम् ज्ञात्वा दत्तकरं राज्ञे ययो तदवमोचनम्. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. When Vasudev heard that Nanda Maharaj, his very dear friend and brother, had come to Mathura and already paid his taxes to Kamsa, he went to Nanda Maharaj's residence. Purport. Vasudev and Nanda Maharaj were so intimately connected that they lived like brothers. Furthermore, it is learned from the notes of Sripad Madhvacharya that Vasudev and Nanda Maharaj were stepbrothers. Vasudev's father, Shursen, married a Vaishya girl, and from her, Nanda Maharaj was born. Later, Nanda Maharaj himself married a Vaishya girl, Yashoda. Therefore, his family is celebrated as a Vaishya family. And Krishna, identifying himself as their son, took charge of Vaishya activities, Krishi Goraksha Vanijyam. Balaram represents plowing the land for agriculture, and therefore he carries in his hand a plow, whereas Krishna tends cows and therefore carries a flute in his hands. Thus the two brothers represent Krishi Raksha and Go Raksha. Hare Krishna. So Krishna has just been born. His wonderful birth festivities have been performed. A very short time has elapsed. And Nanda Maharaj now has gone from Vrindavan to Mathura to pay taxes to King Kamsa. That was the system. That was how taxes were paid in kind. And according to the Vedic system, if you didn't produce, you didn't pay tax. All land belonged to the king. There was no question of private ownership. And the agriculturist tilled the land, or perhaps he looked after the cows as Nanda Maharaj did. And whatever produce resulted, a certain percentage of that was offered to the king as taxes. And the king was expected to utilize these taxes for the welfare of the praja, or the citizens. Elsewhere it is mentioned that when Nanda Maharaj came to Mathura, Kamsa was at a distance. He offered his taxes to his officials, and Kamsa was watching from a distance. He didn't directly interact. And having paid his taxes, he departed. And after having departed, Vasudev, of course, heard that his dear friend and brother Nanda Maharaj had come. Being very eager to meet him, he met him at a solitary place. Nanda Maharaj did not deliberately meet Vasudev openly and in the beginning, but rather he reserved the meeting for later and for a solitary place, because he was afraid of the depredations of Kamsa because he already knew what Kamsa had done to Vasudeva's children. So in a secret place, Vasudeva and Nanda Maharaj met, and that is what is being described in this verse today. Of course, it is mentioned here that Nanda Maharaj and Vasudeva are brothers, but as Prabhupada clarifies, they are stepbrothers. And here Prabhupada mentions Shurasena married a Vaishya girl and from her Nanda Maharaj was born. We find different accounts like this coming at different times in different scriptures. Elsewhere also it is explained that in the Yadu dynasty, there was a king whose name was Devamidha, and he had two queens, one who came from a Kshatriya family and another who came from a Vaishya family. Now the Vedic society was structured in a very systematic way, and today unfortunately because those basic principles of classification have been misunderstood, what we have today is a very deviant and oppressive system that people have come to hate and know as a caste system. But in the modern deviant system, it is birth that is the deciding factor. But that is not what the scriptures say. The scriptures are very clear that one's varna or social classification is based upon one's qualification and not upon one's birth. In the Bhagavad Gita also Krishna says, Chatur Varnyam Maya Srishtam Guna Karma Vibhagashaha. That these four varnas or four social classifications have been made by me in human society, Krishna says. So when Krishna has made something, naturally it must be perfect. So this classification is also perfect. But Krishna hastens to add that this classification is based on guna and karma, qualities and activities. He doesn't say janma. He doesn't use the word janma meaning birth. Only two words are used, guna and karma. So we see in the Vedic system, the sociology was very intricate, very well organized. In today's society, there is no structure practically. There is the haves and the have-nots. And that just goes on changing every now and then. And as Srila Prabhupada used to say, that all these isms are simply different forms of exploitation. So today you may have one class of people who have the money, the Vaishyas who are very powerful, and that's called a capitalist system. And you may have another form of government in which the labor becomes very strong, and that's called the communist system. But either way, it's another ism. It's another form of exploitation. Unless the basic principles are understood, people are only going to exploit each other. There is one famous political leader of the early or mid 20th century. I forget the name of that leader now. Someone who said that capitalism is a reverse of communism. In communism, man exploits man, and in capitalism, it's the reverse. So either way, it's a philosophy and ideology of exploitation. It is just a matter of convenience for the exploiter. When the exploited become very frustrated, then they usurp power and they become the exploiters and others become exploited. In the beginning of Kali, we find that actually Kali made its entry because of the degradation of the Brahmanas. Because the Brahmanas had actually begun exploiting the other people, the other Varnas. And therefore gradually there was a decline, there was a fall. And today we come to a time when we see that in many places in India, people hate the word Brahmana. especially in South India, there are many parts where they just don't want to hear the word Brahmana. It's a bad word. So now the exploiters have become exploited. So they have no facility. Wherever they go, they're discriminated against. So this is how nature works in cycles. But the Vedic system was very perfectly organized. So even though we may think, well, why call somebody a Vaishya, somebody a Kshatriya? But if we understand it with this background in which Lord Krishna has organized it, then things will become clear. So Devamidha, from his Kshatriya wife, he had a son, Shurasen, and from his Vaishya wife, he had a son, Parajanya. Shurasen again married a Kshatriya queen or queens, and he had many sons, the chief amongst whom was Vasudev, who was the father of Krishna. And on the other hand, Parajanya, he married another Vaishya wife, and he had 5 sons, Upananda, Abhinanda, Nanda, Sananda, and Nandana. And Nanda Maharaj, the middle son amongst these, became the foster father of Krishna. So Parjanya is the grandfather of Krishna. And so we can see, therefore, that Nanda Maharaj and Vasudev were stepbrothers in this way, with this connection. And they were very close, but because of Kamsa's activities, there was not much opportunity for them to mingle very closely together. It is explained that Parjanya means the word cloud, as we are familiar from Bhagavad Gita. Annad bhavanti bhutani parjanyad anna sambhavaha. That you, living entities subsist on food grains, and food grains are possible because of the clouds or because of rain. So Parjanya Maharaj, he was like a cloud of nectarian auspiciousness. Such was his conduct, such were his qualities, that he won over everybody. He took on the role of a Vaishya, and predominantly he looked after the cows. And so well known did he become, and so loved was he for all his qualities, that all the cowherd men from his maternal side, because his mother was a Vaishya, from a Vaishya family, they all actually came and surrendered at Parjanya's feet, and they wanted to be under his direction. And Parjanya excelled the Vaishyas in conduct, in wealth, and in every respect, in qualities. He was greatly respected. He lived in Mahavan, Gokul Mahavan, later. It so happened that as a devotee of Vishnu, he worshipped Lord Narayan all his life. Actually, he had been told by the great saint Narad Muni that he should worship Lord Narayan very devotedly, which he did at Nandishwarapura. And at Nandishwarapura, which later became called Nandagram, now we know it as Nandagram, he heard a voice in the sky that declared that, "My dear Parjanya, all auspiciousness to you, very soon you will have 5 sons by my grace, and the middle of these sons, Nanda, will be the most glorious amongst them, and he will have a son who will actually be the ornament of the whole dynasty. He will be worshipped by both the demigods and the demons, and he will subdue all opponents and will be an ocean of auspiciousness." And having heard these things, Parjanya decided to stay on in Nandishwar. Later on, it is explained that he moved out of fear of the demons there. He moved to Mahavan. And then, of course, we know the story that Krishna was transferred from Mathura to Mahavan when he was born, and then he moved on from Gokul after a few years to Chatikara, and then from there back to Nandagram. So Nanda Maharaj, who was with his father, then he moved back to Nandagram after a few years. And Krishna had his adolescent pastimes, his Kaishora pastimes in Nandagram. In Chatikara Vrindavan, he enjoyed his boyhood pastimes, the Paugunda pastimes. And in Gokul Mahavan, he enjoyed his childhood pastimes, the Kaumara pastimes. So in the Kaumara age, he relished the Vatsalyaras with his parents, Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda. Vatsalya means the fraternal mellow, paternal mellow. And in Vrindavan Chatikara, he relished the rasa of sakhya or friendship. And in Nandagram, he relished the mellow of madhurya or shringar. So this is how eventually Krishna's family came back to Nandagram. And it was from Nandagram that eventually Krishna left for Mathura and then onwards to Dwarka. So Parichinda Maharaj was a very, very noble person. And he looked after his sons very devotedly. They grew up to be very fine devotees and citizens. When the time came, Parichinda Maharaj wanted to hand over the family line to his eldest son, Upananda. But Upananda declined. He accepted, but then he handed it over to his younger brother, Nanda Maharaj, glorifying Nanda. So Nanda Maharaj became actually the head of the family of the Brajabasis, and Upananda became his servant by his own choice. The word Upa actually means subsidiary. So in his explanation of why he wanted Nanda Maharaj to be the leader, this is one of the points that he mentioned, that I will be Upananda. Just like you have the Puranas and you have the Upa Puranas, the subsidiary Puranas, the not so important Puranas, which actually serve the purposes of the main Purana. So he said, I will be like the assistant or the servant to Nanda. And he actually guided Nanda Maharaj, just as Jiva Goswami says, Bhishma guided Vichitravirya in Hastinapur. Although Bhishma was the older brother, but he gave the throne to Vichitravirya and then guided him. So in the same way, Upananda always guided Nanda Maharaj, I beg your pardon. And the remarkable thing is that in these five brothers, there was absolutely no envy. Nobody was aspiring for the position that Nanda Maharaj had. Even Nanda Maharaj most reluctantly accepted it because he was ordered to do so. Parijanya Maharaj and his good wife showered all their affection on Parijanya Maharaj. And the other brothers didn't envy him for it. They were very happy because they understood that Nanda Maharaj was an ocean of all kinds of good qualities. Srila Rupa Goswami has described Parijanya Maharaj to be fair complexioned, a little chubby and white haired. And in his Radha Krishna Gano Desha Deepika, he has described the detailed features of each of the associates of Sri Krishna in very much in detail, including what kind of clothes they wear, what color of their hair and their everything. So Parijanya Maharaj then handed over everything to Upananda, who handed over to Nanda Maharaj, and then Nanda Maharaj continued ruling the Vrajavasis very, very nicely. Now he also took up the Vaishya occupation of cowherding. Now again, Rupa Goswami describes that the Vrajavasis are of three broad categories. One are those who look after domestic animals. They're predominantly of the Vaishya nature. The second group are the Brahmanas. And the third group are the others, who are called the Bahisthas. So amongst those who are looking after the domestic animals, again, Rupa Goswami says there are three categories. There are those who are the Vaishyas, whose primary function is to look after the cows. Some of them, they're also called Abhiras because their mothers are from a lower Varna. And the second category of those who look after the domestic animals are the Abhiras. The word Abhira is, we have heard of it many times. We have our famous bhajan, Jaya Vrishabhanu, Jaya Kirtida Sundari, Jaya Paurnamasi, Jaya Abhira Nagari. Right? In this famous bhajan, we use the word Abhira Nagari. Abhira Nagari means, refers to the gopis here and the residents of Braj. Nagar refers to the people who stay in Nagar. So, refers to the Brajabasis. So, the Brajabasis are often referred to as Abhiras. Raghunath Das Goswami also in one poem has referred to Krishna as Abhira Palli Pati Putra. Palli, the word Abhira Palli refers to an enclosure called Ghosha, which could be easily moved. We read in the Srimad Bhagavatam also that when Nanda Maharaj and the other Vrajavasis moved out of fear of the demons from Gokul to Chatikara, they just packed all their belongings in their carts, bullock carts. Life was very simple. They didn't have to pack in washing machines and televisions and computers and so on. They just had utensils and they had simple things. They could settle anywhere, they could move anywhere. And very easily they moved. And at Chatikara, it is explained that they made a semicircle of bullock carts. And then the Brajabasis temporarily settled there before they made a more permanent settlement. So cowherdmen, sometimes they do this, they have an encirclement that's called a palli. So Abhira Palli. So the village of the Abhiras or the cowherds is sometimes called Abhira Palli. So Raghunath Das Goswami says, Abhira Palli Pati Putra. Pati means the Lord, referring to Nanda Maharaj. And Putra is son, that's Krishna, who is a son of the Lord of the cowherds. Similarly, also Srila, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, actually, in the Madhya Leela, Krishna in Dwarka is said to be reflecting on his Vrindavan pastimes. He is thinking about that beautiful form that is like his duplicate, that is his second form. And he says, Udgirna Adbhuta Madhuri Parimalasya Abhira Leelasya Me Daivatam. He says, I remember, I can visualize that form which seems to be like my second form, Medvaitam. And this form is extremely beautiful, Adbhuta Madhurima Parimalasya. And Udgirna, his Leelasya, his activities, his pastimes are Udgirna, overflowing with Madhuri, sweetness, and Parimala, that means fragrance. And such extraordinary beauty and sweetness and fragrance in his pastimes that I also want to be like the residents of Vrindavan so I can relish that beauty of these pastimes. And here he refers to him as Abhira, that he is a cowherd boy. So the word Abhira is generally used to refer to the Brajabasis because of their cowherding activities. In recent times, however, modern historians or I don't know what you call them, maybe anthropologists, they use the word Abhira in a disparaging way. And because they only study the modern history as they understand for the past few centuries or so. So the word Abhira doesn't have a good connotation. It means something like a nomad, like a gypsy, something like that. But Jiva Goswami has emphasized that these Abhiras, they were not ordinary. They were certainly Vaishyas, they were certainly Dvijas. And in order to substantiate his statement, he even quotes from the Srimad Bhagavatam, where Shukadev Goswami describes the houses of the Brajabasis, that they had sacrificial fires. They had all the paraphernalia that was required for performing yajnas, for worshipping the demigods, the brahmanas, and so on. So they had all these facilities. So they were twice born. And Jiva Goswami says that just as Vidura, though he was born from a Shudra mother, but actually acted as a Brahmana because he was so wise, and he gave good counsel to everyone, including Dhritarashtra, Duryodhan, and so on. So similarly, these Abhiras, they actually were very qualified. They were Dvija, twice born. But technically, Rupa Goswami classifies them as a second category, Vaishyas and then Abhiras. Technically, they were a slightly lower category. The third category of these people who looked after domestic animals was the Gurjaras. The descendants of them are still there in the Braja area. There's always some conflict going on between different groups. Gujjars, they're called Gujjars now. Nowadays, that thing is called Gujjars. So it's coming from that time. So these are the three categories of people who were protectors of animals, domestic animals. Then there were the Brahmanas. The Brahmanas also were of two kinds, Rupa Goswami says. One who were engaged and maintained by Nanda Maharaj, and there were others who also performed fire sacrifices. So these Brahmanas also lived in Vrindavan, in Braj. And then there were the Bahisthas, the others, who engaged in various kinds of activities, arts and crafts and various things, various other types of professions. Because in a society, you need all trades and crafts to exist for a society to be self-sufficient. All these things were there. So Braj also in those days was a self-sufficient community, and trade went on by barter. So whatever one produced, one gave away to somebody in exchange for something that one required. So during the Govardhan Leela, just before that, Nanda Maharaj speaks to Krishna and explains the four kinds of activities that the Vaishyas do. Krishi Varnij Govaraksha Kusidam Turyam Uchyate Varta Chaturvidha Tatra Vayam Govrittayo Nisham. He says Vaishyas generally do either Krishi, which is agriculture, Varnijya, which is commerce or trade, Govaraksha, which is cow protection, and Kusidam, which is money lending or banking. But he says, Vayam Govrittayonisham, but we are cow protectors. Our job is to look after the cows. In other words, he's mentioning that even amongst the Vaishyas in those days, there were different categories. So Nanda Maharaj, it appears, therefore, was not engaged in the other activities of the Vaishyas, like money lending and trade and so on, but they would barter. And this we see also from that famous pastime of baby Krishna, when a fruit seller came to Vrindavan, to Gokul. And Krishna heard the cries of the fruit seller who wanted to sell the fruits. And he went up with a few grains of wheat, of thinking that he would barter them in exchange for the fruits. And by the time he reached the fruit seller, the grains had slipped through the fingers of his hands. And he ended up with just maybe a grain or two. But the fruit seller, looking at the beauty of this child, became so captivated that she filled both his hands with as many fruits as he could carry. And because of that genuine service, when she looked down into a basket, she found that instead of fruits, there were all sorts of valuable jewels and other precious stones. So we can see by this that Nanda Maharaj was basically a cow protector. And then Krishna followed in his footsteps. And he also became a cow protector. Therefore here, Srila Prabhupada is mentioning in the purport a very celebrated sentence that is quoted many times, that Krishna, Balaram, represents the plowing of the land for agriculture and therefore carries a plow in his hand, whereas Krishna tends cows and therefore carries a flute in his hands. Thus the two brothers represent Krishi Raksha and Go Raksha. So Balaram is meant for protecting agriculture, and Krishna is meant for protecting the cows, the cow culture. So the cow culture, so to speak, includes agriculture, because you cannot have cow protection without agriculture. So we can understand by this how important these two activities are for the human society. And these two activities, unfortunately, have been much neglected by the modern society, with so much of industrialization and urbanization and so on. These activities have been neglected, and whatever little exists of it exists in a very distorted form. And therefore, the woes of the modern society are numerous, simply because we are not following Lord Krishna's simple economic formula. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, Krishi Goraksha Vanijyam Vaishya Karma Svabhavajam. The activities of the mercantile people are that they look after the cows, they till the land, and they engage in trade and commerce, including banking. So these are trade and commerce and banking are legitimate activities, but it must be seen in the context of agriculture and cow protection and similar things. But today, we have gone far away from the formula established by Lord Krishna. Incidentally, Balaram carries the plow for agriculture. The plow can also be used for chastising. It can be used for subduing, for controlling. And we see that Lord Balaram subdued or chastised Mother Yamuna Devi in Vrindavan, because she refused to cooperate with his will. So similarly, Lord Balaram clears our heart. He tills the field of our heart so that it can become ready to receive the seed of Krishna consciousness. And Balaram therefore represents the Guru Tattva. It is the function of the Guru to create a fertile situation in the heart of the disciple, of the devotee, so that Krishna may then take residence in the heart and Krishna may appear. So this is how Balaram cooperates with Krishna, not just physically in agriculture and cow protection, but also for the individual life of a devotee. Krishna, Balaram, therefore, are important deities for us. In Vrindavan, because our temple happens to be in the Ramanreti area, where Krishna frolicked with his cowherd boyfriends, performing many, many pastimes, Srila Prabhupada deemed it fit to have Krishna Balaram as the main deities. Even though the deities of Radha Krishna, that is Radha Shyam Sundar, were there, but the main central deities were Krishna Balaram, and the whole temple was also called Krishna Balaram Mandir. And one time when someone asked him how we should pray to Krishna Balaram, he said, Krishna, you can pray to Krishna for giving you spiritual intelligence, and you can pray to Balaram for giving you spiritual strength. So in this way, even if you're not doing agriculture and cow protection, even if we happen to be staying in the city and have to go to work, or if you're living in the ashram, we can still pray to Balaram to use his plow and till the soil of our heart so it can become fertile, and so that then we may receive the seed of Krishna consciousness and we may water and perform this agricultural operation on the heart so that our devotional creeper may flourish because it is being nourished in this way. Shri Shri Krishna Balaram ki jai, Shri Shri Radha Gopinath ki jai, Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Thank you very much. Are there any comments or questions? Yes.
Raj, for the wonderful class. In the beginning you mentioned about how Varna and Ashrama is not depending on the birth, but it is depending on the qualities. One devotee asked me this question, that he said that it seems like in the previous ages, the birth has been taken also as a main reason for the Varna, because those who are born in other Varnas were not allowed to perform the duty of the other Varnas. And he said even in Gaudiya line also, those who are born in a non-Brahman family in previous times, they were not performing the duty of a Brahmanas. And even other sampradayas for a long time, even now also, they are kind of stick to the principle of birth as one of the factors. So he's asking, is that it was meant for the old age, it has some validity, or if it is valid, what made the present followers of ISKCON to change that attitude?
It is not that the present followers of ISKCON have changed. This is the actual spirit and the meaning of the teachings, that the varna is not dependent on birth. At the same time, it has to be admitted that very often birth does play a role. Birth has its place, because one takes birth according to one's previous karma, the karma of the previous life. So from an ordinary point of view, from a varnashrama point of view, yes, birth is important because it indicates something of our qualification with respect to what we did in our previous life. So we get a certain kind of family. It is an advantage, as Srila Prabhupada explained, that if somebody is born in a doctor's family, for example, it may become that much a little easier for that child to become a doctor, because he's surrounded by a medical atmosphere right from childhood. He's seeing the stethoscope and all kinds of medicines and everything. But at the end of the day, if that child doesn't do well in his school and doesn't get into medical college and doesn't qualify himself in medical studies, he'll not be able to qualify himself as a doctor, despite the fact that he is a doctor's child. So in the same way, birth has its place. It has its connection to the karma of the previous life, but it is an opportunity, not a right. Birth does not confer varna upon a person. It is qualification that confers the guna and the karma. The birth is something that may help. And there are numerous instances like this in history. We just mentioned one where Vidura was born of a Kshatriya, of a Vyasadeva and a maidservant who was a Shudrani. But he acted like a Brahmana. Jiva Goswami says that he was playing the role of a Brahmana because he was counseling, he was advising, and so on. And there are, of course, numerous examples like this. Now, coming to the Gaudiya situation, yes, we do find in Gaudiya history that people from born in a certain community did not perform the functions of others, and the Gaudiya Vaishnavas did not interfere with that. But the answer to that is that they didn't want to rock the boat, so to speak. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even in his time, Haridas Thakur and Sanatan Goswami, Rupa Goswami did not enter Jagannath temple. We don't hear about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu raising a big protest about it. He never did that, although he spoke so forcefully about principles in his teachings. He said it very clearly. But Haridas Thakur, of course, Haridas Thakur and Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis, they didn't go voluntarily out of their own humility, feeling themselves very lowly, because they were either born Muslims or they were deemed Muslims because of being associated with Muslims for a long time. But Mahaprabhu never actively interfered. He didn't go to the authorities of the temple and say, "You must let them in," because he knew it would cause too much of a social disturbance. And therefore, another interesting point is we do not find, except in one case, and even then it's very close, that Mahaprabhu always ate at the homes of Brahmanas, who were born Brahmanas. He ate at the house of a Sanodiya Brahmana in Mathura, Madhavendra Puri ate, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Madhavendra Puri has eaten at your place and that's good enough for me. They are considered a slightly lower class of brahmanas. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to some degree respected that system because he didn't want to cause too much of a disturbance. And so also some of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas who followed later on. But again, even in those who followed Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we see numerous examples. Narottam Das Thakur, he was not a brahmana in the sense of birth. But he had disciples like Ganga Narayan Chakravarti and so on, who were brahmanas. So you do find examples. And in the modern times, there may be some people in the Gaudiya, I don't know. But essentially Mahaprabhu's teachings are very clear. The other sampradayas, yes, some of the other sampradayas do emphasize the importance of birth. But we have to see it in the current context of Kali Yuga. In today's age, especially now, 2012, how many people are genuinely brahmanas? Even those who are born in brahmana families. Just yesterday one devotee wrote me an email saying he is in Kerala. And he says there even the Brahmins are eating cow meat. It's a big scale. It's not just few people. That's what he wrote to me just yesterday. So then, what kind of birth qualification is that? What is the value of such a birth? Unless there is a genuine Brahminical atmosphere in the house, such a birth will not even confer an advantage that was there in the earlier ages. Okay? Maharaj, would you like to say any comments? Any corrections? Yeah, one last question if somebody has. Yeah.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna. Maharaj,
thank you for such an elaborate presentation. Maharaj, like before we got connected to ISKCON and take up Krishna consciousness, we have grown up without an understanding of Varnashram, Varna and our real nature to serve. So when we come to a community like ISKCON, we might take up Seva which matches to our Varna or real nature, but it will not have that much of visibility. So how can I render my services in a mood that this visibility doesn't disturb rendering my services?
Why should the service be visible?
I associate some glamour or prestige around a seva. That's why.
Then the seva is compromised, isn't it? If the motivation for the service is the glamour or the prestige, then the purity of the service is compromised and the benefit is also then compromised. Correct? So here, in our movement, we understand that when we become devotees, then there is no consideration of Varna, in the sense that now we consider everyone as a Vaishnava. And it is offensive to say that here is a Shudra Vaishnava, here is a Vaishya Vaishnava. So we shouldn't think like that. That is an offense. At the same time, because we still have this material body, and because we are still struggling with the three modes of material nature, the modes have their play or their control on us, and we all have this svabhava, this propensity, this nature. And in the long term, it is always better, it is a more sustainable thing for a person to be inclined, to be engaged according to his propensity, which means Varna. So basically when we're talking of Varnashrama within ISKCON, what we're saying is everybody should be engaged in the service of Krishna according to his or her propensities. But at the same time, because it is service to Krishna in a mood of devotion that is more important than one's propensity, so one is willing to do any kind of service that may be required for the service of Krishna. So therefore I use the word long term and sustainable. that if somebody has to be sustainably moving steadily in Krishna consciousness lifelong, he or she should be properly situated according to use Prabhupada's words, his or her psychophysical condition and propensities. So that is the application of the Varnashrama principles in our society. So we do our spiritual activities, and that's common for everyone, our chanting of the japa, kirtan, everything. But because our tendencies and propensities may be different, so we engage in different types of services, and yet we are ever ready to work or to do anything that may be necessary to please Krishna. One day you may be sitting on the Vyasasana giving a class, the next day you may be sweeping the toilet, cleaning the toilets, or you may be doing some money dealings for the temple, or anything that is required for Krishna's service. Okay? One final question, somebody says, how important is right pronunciation in Krishna consciousness? Like Saraswate Deve. Well, it's a big topic. It's important and not important. We all know the famous phrase, Bhavagrahi Janardana. Yes? Murkho Vadati Vishnaya, Dhiro Vadati Vishnave, Ubhayor Tat Samam Punyam, Bhavagrahi Janardana. So this verse says, Murkho Vadati Vishnaya. If there's someone who's not educated in the principles of grammar, of Sanskrit grammar, when he addresses Lord Vishnu, he may say, Om Namo Vishnaya. Actually, when you address, just because you say Krishnaya, but when it comes to Vishnu, you don't say Vishnaya, you say Vishnave. Om Krishnaya Namaha, for example. But you don't say Om Vishnaya Namaha, you say Om Vishnave Namaha. So someone who's not trained in grammar may say Vishnaya Namaha. Dhiro Vadati Vishnave. Dhira means now a learned person, an educated person, may correctly say Vishnave Namaha. But Ubhayor Tat Samam Punyam, but both of them get the same benefit. Bhavagrahi Janardana, because Lord Krishna or Janardana is Bhavagrahi. He accepts the bhava or the devotion of the devotee. He is not Uccharan Grahi or pronunciation. It's not that Krishna is the one who accepts your pronunciation. He is not Vyakaran Grahi. He is not grammar. He doesn't accept our grammar. He is not Dhanam Grahi. He doesn't accept our money. He accepts our bhava. So the first point to make is that the bottom line is our devotion. It doesn't matter at that platform whether we can pronounce clearly or not. If we have devotion, that is the principal thing that Krishna is concerned with. So this must be a very clear fundamental point that we all are clear about. Having said that, however, we can go ahead to the next point logically, that if there is devotion, then we will do whatever we are doing as well as possible, because we know we're doing it for the object of our love, that is Krishna. So if we are sweeping the floor, we would like to learn how to sweep well. If you're cooking, you'd like to know how to cook well, because you're doing it for Krishna. If you're worshipping the deity, you'd like to know how to do it well, because you're doing it for Krishna. So similarly, we are pronouncing verses every day. So then, where there's devotion, we also want to know how to pronounce as well as we can. So the important thing is not the end result. Whether you are finally able to pronounce the verses or not is not so important as your consciousness. You try your best. Just like when we sing for Krishna, we try to sing as well as possible to please Krishna. Now, someone may be blessed with a very good voice, good talent for music, and may sing very beautifully. Another person may not be blessed with such a talent, but still tries his or her best to sing as beautifully as possible. Others may not hear it as being, see it as being beautiful, but he's trying his best to do it. So therefore, that pleasing is, that singing is pleasing to Krishna, because this devotee is trying his best to sing as well as he possibly can to please Krishna. On the other hand, if somebody has talent for Krishna but is not singing with a motive to please Krishna, but is doing it for some other purpose, then that may not be so pleasing to Krishna, even though it may be pleasing to the ears of others around him because it sounds very melodious. So therefore, number one, it is devotion, our bhava, that is accepted by Krishna, the first point. And second point, at the same time, why not do it, try to do it well, since we're doing it out of devotion for Krishna. And we're doing it every day. So it's something that we need to work about. And Prabhupada spoke many times about this. There were a couple of classes. There was one class in Tokyo in which the entire class was just, he made every single devotee present in the class recite the verse. There was no other lecture. And then he would just correct. With, as every devotee chanted the verse, he would correct and say, no, not like this, you pronounce it like that. So there are a couple of instances like this. And also from the point of view of preaching, it is something that also makes a difference. If people see that we are not pronouncing clearly, especially in some circles in India, it doesn't matter so much nowadays, but still, then it helps in preaching also if they know that you are pronouncing everything properly. Anyway, the topic is big, but I just tried to give a very brief opinion about this. So we'll end here. It's quite late. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Gaur Premanande.